Hi, and welcome to Happiness Through Hardship, the podcast, where we share positive stories and suggestions about finding hope, resources, and connections to help us all get through hard times. I'm Karen Sullivan, a mom, an author, and a stage 4 cancer patient who's always looking around me for inspiration. I believe in surrounding myself with people and experiences that make me smile. And that's what I'm hoping to do for you today. So grab your favorite drink, get cozy, and let's get started. I am so excited to introduce you to Marnie Dotchess Marmette, a former marketing and HR exec gone serial entrepreneur who's also a yoga instructor, nutrition health coach, and mom of three with a focus on living a Zenful life. Creator of Chili Bean Promotions, Zenful Life Coaching, and co-host of the podcast, The Art of Living Well, Marnie focuses on teaching women and teen girls the importance of wellness throughout life, including diet, exercise, sleep, stress management, and more. Not only is she an expert in health plans that nurture vitality and longevity, she's also recently come out with her memoir, My Song Unleashed, and is here to give us a glimpse into her process. Marnie, I'm so excited to see you.
I'm so happy to be here. This is amazing.
It is two podcasters, both with roots in Minneapolis, that have known each other since we were probably, what, 8, 9?
I was thinking about this last night. I think it was like 3rd or 4th grade.
Yeah, we've known each other a really long time. And you know what? That's what's kind of cool about getting old. I'm not going to say we're getting old in terms of the longevity piece of it, is that we may have had a lot of in common in 3rd or 4th grade. We dabbled here and there. We have some really close friends that are friends. And then we went our separate ways in different colleges and we went to different high schools. So, you know, as I was telling her, I read her memoir and it was so fun for me to not only some of the references, like if you're reading this and you're from Minneapolis, you're going to kind of laugh at some of the stores that are mentioned and the places because you can visualize it. Although it's visualizing it like 25 odd years ago, right? Probably more than that. But it's really interesting to take the stories for me as, you know, the host, as the reader of the memoir, to try and understand the story coming from her inside her heart. Whereas as a child growing up and maybe being on the outside of it, half these things I didn't even know existed. So I think that's what's so beautiful about a memoir, is that you're really getting this inside take of what a person is all about. And in this case, I mean, literally her book, My Song Unleashed, she is talking about finding her voice, finding your voice, finding your voice. So Marnie, can you take a moment and explain what does that mean? Because we hear it all the time, especially in wellness circles and even in business circles. You hear people say, find your voice.
I think, you know, it's funny. I've been asked this question quite a bit since writing the memoir. And I think that when I was on my journey to finding my voice, I didn't even know I was on the journey to finding my voice, right? Like,
right.
Even through writing the book, I wasn't like, I'm going to write a book about finding my voice. Like, I started writing and those themes kept coming through. But I think that as a child, I felt very unheard and silenced a lot. And I was told, you know, I had a bad singing voice and I talked too much or whatever it was. And so I think I had a lot pent up inside of me for such a long time. And I just, you know, kind of became who I thought I was supposed to be or what was expected of me. I think a lot of girls, young girls and women, feel pressure to be someone that maybe their parents have the idea that they are, their teachers or whoever it is. And you know, you kind of settle into this expectation of what it is to be who you think you're supposed to be. And so when I think about finding your voice, it's really about tuning into yourself and stepping into your own authenticity, whatever that is, and just like truly being who you are, living a life that you want to live and not caring about what other people think or, you know, yeah, basically.
Well, it's interesting when you talk about, it's in some ways the art of writing. You said that you weren't necessarily looking to find your voice. You were just writing. Can you share your journey a little bit of how you came to this piece of, I mean, I know you said in the book that you always wanted to write a book, but how did you really get there?
Well, so I have been a journaler my entire life. So I have stacks and stacks of journals. So from that perspective, I've always kind of personally written what's going on in my mind. And I think that has been an outlet for me, not even realizing it really. And I could go, you know, 9 months without writing, and then I'll pick up a journal and start writing again. And literally this has been going on since like kindergarten or first grade or whenever my parents gave me my first diary. So yeah. Really long time. But what ended up happening is a few years ago, I enrolled in a writing class, and it was a local class here in Minneapolis. And I found that I really enjoyed it, and I really liked sharing the stories and just getting, there were lots of prompts and getting my thoughts out. And what I didn't like about it is that I was finding that I was writing some really personal things, and I knew some people in the class, and I was like, yeah, this doesn't feel comfortable to me exactly. So I asked the instructor if she had any recommendations for me, and I ended up joining the Creative Nonfiction Center, which is an online school, which I think may have folded in the pandemic, unfortunately. But I enrolled in their memoir writing class, mostly not because I wanted to write a memoir, but because that was the class that worked in my schedule. And I thought, well, I just want to write. So I enrolled in the class. I took it for the first quarter of the year. And I loved the instructor. The people in the class were from all over the world. And you had to get certain words in every week. And it was required. And if you wanted feedback from the other students and the instructor, you needed to turn your words in. So that was very motivating for me. And there were always prompts. So I ended up taking this class 4 times over the course of an entire year with the same instructor, the same exact course, the same prompts, but I loved it. And it kept me writing weekly. And I mean, really daily, but then you turn in your words weekly.
Right.
And my memoir came out over the course of that year in that course. And I didn't even realize I had a memoir. And people in the course were like, we want to hear more, like write more about this or write more about that. And we think you should write a book. And I was like, really? Like, I should write a book about this? Because I always thought I'd write like a health and wellness book. And so that's how it happened. It was very cathartic. And I was really writing for me and for personal reasons. And all of a sudden, when people were telling me that they wanted to hear more and that my stories they could relate to, even if it was completely unrelated, whatever they were dealing with, they could still relate to the themes in my stories. And that felt really good. So I was like, okay, maybe I should explore this more.
Right.
So.
Well, and I love, for you, you've been a writer ever since you were little. Like you said, you've been journaling. And I will say, I would almost challenge anybody who's listening now who says they're not a writer. And I can't take credit for this because when I was in grad school, one of my professors had asked us, and by the way, it was a writing class, but he said, who here considers us a writer or considers yourself a writer? And, you know, a handful of people raised their hand. And then he threw out a bunch of questions. Who here has ever written a memo? All right. So then you got half the people that had a business background. They wrote a memo. Who here has ever written a letter to their grandma? Then you have other people raising their hands. Who here has ever written to-do lists? Who here has ever written a text? And his point was, hey, we all write. It depends on who your audience is, maybe how you write, but we are all writers. And you know, I know that through the course of my hardship, which most people here know that my hardship has been dealing with cancer 19 years and 10 years with stage 4, I have written a lot. In the beginning, it was just meant like literally, I wasn't a big journaler. On and off again, I would journal. But I took a journal and I just scribbled all over it. I didn't even write. My first entry wasn't even writing. So I love to encourage people when they are going through a hard time, is to really start to write whatever that might look like. Now, is it going to, maybe you're going to love it and like Marnie, write a memoir. Or maybe I'll say for my instance is I decided that years later, I wanted to write a book to be able to help people. And I went back to that journal. And if nothing else, it's not like I necessarily took things I wrote then and quoted it, but it gave me a place to go back to the mentality I was in to be able to write that book. So I think I want to segue here a little bit in talking about the process of writing a memoir, Marnie, because I think that a lot of people out there, listen, if you're going through hardship, I want to say, whoever's listening, do not feel like you have to write a book. However, if you have that itch or whatever reason it might be, I want to ask Marnie to share a bit of that process. You know, she talked a bit about the writing class, but I want to dig a little deeper. And I want to know, Marnie, if you know others who have written memoirs, why do people write memoirs?
You know, it's an interesting question. I know a ton of people that have written memoirs because that's all I've been reading for the last 2 years are memoirs, I feel like. I think that everybody has a story to tell. I truly believe this. Every single person, you do not need to be Matthew McConaughey to write a memoir or Harry or, you know what I mean?
Right,
like, you don't need to be famous. I think that women are especially are writing memoirs like crazy right now because they're starting to step into their own and feel empowered and feel like, okay, what I have to say is important. And I think that's why the genre is taking off so much. I truly think that people want to get their message out into the world.
And I think whether it's the message, I also feel like in reading this, it's brave to share it with children. In your case, it's a little bit of your legacy as well. And I'm sure your family and your friends saw all the hard work, the grit that you put into it. Like I look at that and I think, wow, we are still always role models for hopefully somebody. Maybe it's a relative or your children. And so there are all these reasons why one could write specifically the memoir. So, okay, now the nitty gritty.
Well, I just want to say one thing about that. So I actually didn't tell anyone for a long time that I was writing this book.
Ooh,
so
I didn't know that.
Family knew, like my kids knew and my husband knew. But I really didn't talk about it because I wasn't even certain that I was going to like turn this into, like, I wasn't sure. I didn't want to talk about it. But then there came a point where like, okay, this is happening. Like I need to start talking about it.
Yeah.
But I really kept it inside for a long time.
Now, do you think that that's part of the old you wrestling with the new you in the, like, what are people going to think? Am I going to have to explain myself? Or was it just you weren't sure where it's going?
I think it was a combination of both, in all honesty. Like, I, you know, was like, I'm not a writer. Not that I'm not a writer, but, like, I can't, like, who am I to publish a book? Like, that was, I always had that, like, voice in my head saying, like, really? You're going to put this out there? But I did, and it's felt amazing.
And I mean, it's felt amazing. I want to go there for a second. Is what surprised you in this, you know, for you, somebody who wanted to be a writer, having this as a dream, but when it actually happens, like, how did you feel and what has surprised you?
It truly has felt like the birth of another child. Because it's so much work and it's still so much work, like promoting the book. But I would say that I feel completely almost like naked. Like I just feel like everything is out there. I am me. I don't have anything to hide. People are asking me questions about that. I'm getting like amazing feedback from other women. And it feels really, really good. And it's really allowed me to step into whatever kind of insecurities or fears that I did have around it before it came out and embrace that and just like plow forward through it. And that's felt amazing.
Wow. I mean, you sound just so full of positive energy that it looks like it feels good. So if you were to give advice to listeners out there who want to start on this journey, what advice would you give or what steps would you tell them to take?
I would say in terms of writing.
Yes.
I would say, you know, write as much as you can. People ask me all the time, oh, are you one of those people that get up at 5 a.m. and write every day? No, I am not. I am one of those people. For my entire book, I like needed to feel inspired about something. So for me, my inspiration came from walking outside in nature, like just with my dog by myself in the woods. I would have time to think. I would think about something and then I'd be like, oh my gosh, I have to go home and write about that. But I did not write every day. I did not write at 5 a.m. every day. It can be done without doing that. I think you need to find what works for you in your own life. Obviously, if you want to write a book, you need to write. So, but if it means you need to be in a class to be with other people or have word counts or have prompts, like whatever it is, like find what works for you is my best advice. My second piece of advice is it's really scary and step into that fear. Like you have to just put one foot in front of the other, because what I say to myself all the time is, what is the worst thing that can happen? Like, what is the absolute worst thing that can happen? And it's usually not that bad in terms of whatever you're afraid of, whatever that fear is. So just step into it, take small baby steps, and you can do this. That's what I would say.
I think the other thing is that it used to be so daunting. When we were growing up, there were a few of these big publishing houses, and that was the only way. I mean, listen, this ages us, right? But there wasn't even an internet when we were like really young. So you couldn't even write a blog because it didn't exist. Like, I don't think my Commodore 64 knew how to do that. But now there's so many avenues. There's someone that I interviewed, Audrey, a few years ago on the podcast, and she was a fashionista, a fashion expert, worked in New York, and then she changed her career to become a blogger. She became quite famous, and now she's a TV anchor. However, on the side during the pandemic, she decided she wanted to write novels, okay? And she wrote, now her novels are all over on Amazon. Amazon has their own, you can write ebooks. And the threshold is pretty low in terms of there's not a lot of money. Clearly you've got to like write the book, have your own creative, but the steps in that are pretty easy. And I know there's other avenues to go besides the big Simon & Schuster, which obviously that's still around and that's still amazing. But can you talk a moment a little bit about the like hybrid self-publishing and self-publishing? Because those are avenues that are, I don't want to say they're easier to get into because I know that they can be a lot of work, but they may be a little more tangible than getting the literary agent, trying to get to New York.
Yeah, so I don't know a lot about self-publishing other than what I researched, because I ended up going with a publisher. The company is called Publish Her, and they publish women's writings. They're local in Minneapolis. But the model that I used is they take your book and they, you know, do the editing for you, the copy editing, the artwork, and they basically take you through the entire process until your book is, you know, out into the world. They even, you know, through the launch party. And then you're kind of on your own for marketing and everything after that. Now, there's different publishers, different hybrid. So actually, my publisher considers themselves an independent publisher, which is slightly different from hybrid. So there's all these models coming out now, and they all do things differently. So I think some of the hybrid might do some of the marketing for you. I'm not even exactly sure, to be honest, because I feel like this is changing so rapidly. Right. And more people, I think, are not going through those traditional routes unless you're like, you know, Stephen King or Danielle Steele or some of these like really big authors where they just are signing you. I think the newer, smaller authors are tending to go with the independent publishers, the hybrids. From what I understand, self-publishing is a ton of work, depending on what you want your book to look like, right? Like if you're just trying to get something. I don't know a lot about it. I looked into it a little bit and I was overwhelmed by the process just because I knew nothing about publishing and didn't feel like I had the knowledge or expertise to self-publish.
Well, and that's why it's great that there are different options out there. If you're listening right now and you're thinking, I have an idea, I have an itch, there are different ways to go. That way your message gets out or whatever it is that you want to share with the world or play around with, right? I mean, as Marnie, as you're saying, it was an evolution in all of this. You didn't necessarily think you were going to write a memoir. You just wanted to write. And as it became cathartic for you, you just kept doing it. Now, I want to ask a little bit more a personal of a question here, because when one is writing a memoir, you're picking points in your life that have meaning. And the cast of characters are, in this case, your family, right? And how did you, were very real when you were talking about your family, specifically your relationship with your parents. And how did your relationship change? Or if maybe change isn't the word I want, can you explain to us a little bit about the benefits, let's say the pros and the cons of talking about your family and your real life there?
Yeah, I mean, that was definitely hard at times because I really wanted to stay true to my story, but I also wanted to be respectful of my family and their privacy. And, like I mentioned earlier, I did share with my family that I was writing this book, but I didn't really tell them any details until it got pretty far along. And then I was like, okay, I probably need to, I already had my publisher and they're like, you need to start getting permissions. And I was like, okay, that's going to be interesting because now I need to approach my family, share with them what kinds of things are in the book and get permissions from them. And so I went to my parents first and my dad was like, you can write whatever you want. I don't care. I'll love you no matter what you say. And so then my mom kind of just followed suit. And I was like, oh, this is even scarier now, right?
Now I think I really got to do it.
So I really felt supported by my parents. I didn't let them read it until I had my first, basically when you publish a book, they send you a sample.
Yeah, right.
So I was like, I think you need to read this before it comes out. I just want to make sure that you guys are comfortable. And it was really far along at that point. I actually think I'm closer with them through this process. It's really interesting. I don't know that they realized how I was feeling through a lot of what I wrote about. And I think it has brought us closer in a really positive way. My brother is the only person that, I had to get permissions from a lot of people in this book. And my brother was the only person that wanted to see every line where his name was mentioned in the book.
All right. So they had to read it.
So I didn't send him the book. I just sent him every line where his name was mentioned.
Okay.
Because I didn't want him to read it ahead of time.
Yeah.
So that was interesting, but he had no issue with it. And, obviously Jordan had read the book ahead of time and we had talked a lot about what I was going to put in there and what I wasn't going to put in there. And I also had a developmental editor, which is different from a copy editor. So a copy editor is someone, that edits the grammar and whatever. And the developmental editor, Kate Hopper, who is unbelievable, if anyone's looking for one, she really helped me hone in on things that I needed to dig in deeper. And if I was saying something about a family member or someone that she was like, this could be hurtful and it's not really relevant to the story, it was taken out.
Okay.
And that was really, really helpful for me because it's hard when you're writing it yourself to be able to do that.
Right. Well, it's interesting. I didn't realize that there was a developmental editor versus the copy editor. And I suppose that they're probably, depending on which route you go, you get these different people that play various roles and sometimes they overlap.
I actually, just to let you know about that, I worked with her for a year on my manuscript before it went to a publisher.
Wow. Okay. And did you get her independent?
Yeah, I hired her.
Got it.
And that is a pretty common thing that I had never heard of, but my memoir writing teacher shared with me what she thought would be the best and strongest way to get to turn my writings into a book. And so, and most people, if not all that write these types of books, work with a developmental editor.
Now, listen, I'll say you're not the first person that have said classes are golden. If you want to write a book, if you want to write a screenplay, whatever it might be, I have one of my first business mentor ever, Stacy Lenders, been on the podcast, and she actually wrote a novel and a screenplay for that matter as well. But she swears by going to classes, and she's been going now for years upon years, because not only, you know, as you mentioned, you become accountable, the time is there, you get the feedback, you get the teaching, but you also get all these resources that you don't really realize that you need because you just don't know.
Right.
And so that it sounds like it's a pretty, it was monumental for her. It sounds like it was the same for you. So that is great. Well, I'm really happy to hear that your family was so supportive. And for those out there that are, you know, considering doing the same, you know that you probably know your audience and you got to figure out the best way to connect with them, because to Marnie's point, you're probably, if you're going to write about them, unless you change their names and change a little bit of the story about them, you're going to need their permissions when it comes to a memoir.
And actually, there were some people in the books whose names, and like, you know, there's a Mean Girl chapter in the book, right? And that chapter, I had to change everybody's name and the context of the story because, you know, I wasn't going to get permission to do that. And that is very typical in a memoir where, like, if you look at the beginning of the book, it says there may be some, you know, names and things that have been changed to for privacy, right, or whatever the reason may be.
Right. Wow.
Yeah.
So that's interesting, because when I was reading it, I was just imagining you going on this trip and, but
well,
that
is true. I mean, the bulk of the story is true. There were just like details around the characters. That
right.
Were
so that people, they wouldn't be called out. And that's a respectful thing to do. So
yeah.
Now I want to take a total left turn here, because you are a health and wellness expert. You are a co-host of the podcast, The Art of Living Well. You are an entrepreneur, and specifically you've been running your own nutrition counseling, you know, the Zenful
Life Coaching.
Yes, yep. I'm about Zenful Life Coaching. Can you give us a few of some of your favorite health and wellness tips or thoughts? Because we're all like, I will tell you, for as long as I've been doing this podcast, we're talking about taking small steps to find, you know, better happiness, better health. And how can you do that? Really by tapping into your well-being and focusing on that. And so I'd love for you to take a few moments to share some of your thoughts on that, because I think it's all related.
Yeah. So, well, first of all, I think that people know what they need to do, right? Like in general, the most basic things that we need to do for our health and wellness, everybody knows what they are. And I'll talk about that in a minute, but it's doing them that I think people find challenging. It's making the time to make it a priority, to actually do the things. And that's where I come in and help a lot of people, because most people that hire me know what they need to do. They just, for whatever reason, they have something holding them back or many things holding them back. And I try and help them figure out what's holding them back and how we can, you know, work this into their lives on a daily basis. But I would say that finding balance in your life is probably one of the most important things in my mind. You know, it's that yin and that yang, right? So it's not being 100% perfect, because nobody's perfect on anything, right? Like, not striving for perfection here. We're striving for balance. We're striving for feeling well in our mind, body, and spirit. In terms of wellness tips, you know, I think sleep is a number one priority. It's not overrated. It is so important. It is essential to our physical well-being, our mental well-being. Everybody needs sleep. People need different amounts, right? Like some people can get by maybe with 6 hours. Some people need 8 hours, but we all need sleep on a regular basis. And you can't catch up on your sleep. If you're not sleeping for 6 days in a row, and then you're like, oh, but I slept 10 hours last night. Like, it doesn't work like that. Like, you need your sleep every single night. And there are ways to help you sleep if you're having trouble. So I would say sleep is number one. Healthy eating is extremely important in my book. And that doesn't mean, like I said before, about perfection. Like, we're not saying you can only eat, you know, ideally you're eating most of your diet is like whole fruits and vegetables, right? And lots of different colors and some proteins and some healthy fats. But, you know, everybody likes their sugar, their carbs, whatever it is. And carbs are okay. Their carbs are okay. We need carbs, right? To live a healthy life. So in my opinion, I'm not a doctor, but these are, these are my opinions.
I was just going to say, I'm like, everything you're saying is so true. And to your point in the beginning, a lot of this stuff is stuff our grandmother told us, right? It's just about doing them. And yes, we get so busy in life and maybe even so stressed in life that it becomes overwhelming. And so as you're throwing all this out there, like, you're not saying, I'm not saying, no one is saying, make sure everything in your life is like this right now. You're saying, you know, if you're having a hard time with sleep, know it's important and try. Reach out to a doctor, reach out to a life coach, reach out to a holistic doctor, whoever it might be, or do a little of studying on your own. Try and find some tools to help you with each of these. Sleep being incredibly important because we really have a hard time functioning without it.
Right. And eating too, like, you know, I would say my clients, one of the biggest difficulties they have is they don't know how to meal prep, or they don't know what to buy at the grocery store. They don't know how to prep food ahead of time, and they don't know what to make. This can be solved pretty easily if you take the time, if, you know, hire someone if you need help. There's a lot online. It doesn't need to be fancy meals that are complicated. So I just think, you know, being mindful about healthy, nutritious food is probably one of the first steps. I would also say, Karen, you mentioned stress. Stress is huge. Like, we need to manage our stress, right? We need to find healthy ways to cope with our stress. So, you know, alcohol is probably not the healthiest way to cope with stress. I see so many women that are using alcohol as a method of coping, but learning how to breathe, I mean, that is free, you guys. Breathing is free. So learning how to breathe, how to meditate.
Okay, can I just tell you that I joke around saying I never knew how to breathe because, like, every time I'd run upstairs, okay, some people just get winded. And yes, I would sometimes get winded running upstairs. But it was because I was breathing the wrong way. And when I say wrong way, I just wasn't really breathing instead of taking a deep breath in and then taking a deep breath out, right? Or breathing in and holding it through your nose, however it might be. I was one of those people when I exercise, I wouldn't really think about my breathing. And sometimes I just would be almost holding my breath. So I would then become more winded. Thus, I potentially, if I'm in stressful situations, might be adding to my stress, not helping it out.
Absolutely. I mean, I didn't know how to breathe either. Like, I actually think that's a pretty common issue among humans and people. Like, I, you know, when a baby is born, they know how to breathe. And somewhere along the way, things get messed up, right? Like, I didn't learn how to breathe until I went into yoga teacher training. And then I was like, oh my gosh, I've been breathing wrong my whole life.
Right.
And like you tense everything up and it's like not good for you, right?
All right. When I actually share that message a lot and joke around like we're doing here about not knowing how to breathe is when I talk to people about being a public speaker, it's, you know, a lot of people have different nerves and what are ways that you can help yourself be in that zone to go out there. And one of it is just like taking some deep breaths. What is your favorite one? Would you be able to share it with us? Because wherever, and if you're in the car right now, you know, just listen. You may not be able to do it as you're driving, but because sometimes I'll close my eyes when I do it. What do you do as a go-to?
So my absolute, this is my new thing right now. And you can't do this driving. So I go to legs up the wall pose. If you're familiar with that, you literally like shimmy your butt next to the wall and then put your legs up the wall. So you're laying on your back. This is my absolute favorite way to de-stress. Okay. And I try and do it as much as I can in the evening. And I'll like light a candle and I will put a crystal on my chest.
Okay. Yeah.
And I will lay down and close my eyes, you know, with my arms, you know, my palms out open and just breathe. And like everything is just like, and your back releases and my neck releases and my hamstrings release. And it just feels really, really good. So that is my favorite way for me to release stress. And if I'm doing like a breathing or a meditation technique, obviously just taking deep breaths in the morning when I wake up, before I even jump out of bed, I take like 10 deep belly breaths every single day. And I think about, you know, how I want the day. That I've probably been doing that for, I don't know, 2 or 3 years now. And it makes a big difference in starting your day. And it literally takes, you know, 30 seconds or a minute or whatever it is. Like it's pretty quick.
What I love about this conversation is that they're so accessible. If you take a moment, I love the legs up the wall and just breathing. And I like the lighting of the candle. You're giving yourself time and space, even if it's for just a few minutes, to just let your body be. And I know, and I say this all the time, when I was living my best corporate life, I loved what I did, but I was always going, 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 going. I joked around about being the Energizer Bunny and I was quite proud of it. And that just fed on my stress. And so even though I might have liked what I do, so hopefully you're out there like you like what you do, but we all need some time to ourselves just to be, whether it's just for the day-to-day to de-stress or if you're going through a hard time. I know that for me in my journey that it's been incredibly helpful the last 10 years where I have been embracing wellness. And that's part of the reason why Marnie and I reconnected, because we hadn't seen each other since probably before high school maybe. But we have very different paths that got us towards really this connection to wellness. But it's through the adventures, we'll say, I think we've both found ways to be well and using these various modalities as tools. So Marnie, I am very grateful that you were here on the podcast today. You know, I'm grateful that we've reconnected on so many ways because it's really fun to laugh about childhood and you know, some of the people we have, like I had mentioned earlier, we have one friend, which I will bring up as we are about to play the Grateful Game, that I am incredibly grateful for. And then we have a whole slew of other people that like I'm friends with that you know of and you're friends with and I know of. And it was really a joy to see some of those names in the book of your good friends like Ellie Cohen.
Well, and we went to camp together, right?
And we went to camp together, right? But that feels like 5 million years ago, right? That it's really a joy. I think I love my childhood. And so you playing a role in it, it's been fun to reconnect here. So
this has been awesome.
So for those of you that are new to me, every episode here on Happiness Through Hardship, the podcast, we play what I call the Grateful Game. Now I started it when my son was 9, he's now 15. And it was literally, I think he just appeased me because he wanted to stay up later. And I just had my grateful, the gratitude journal. We got into bed. We wrote these notes out. What are we grateful for and why today? And then I realized that wasn't working because it was keeping him up too late. So we would lie down in bed. We'd give ourselves each a minute or two. And because he was a 9-year-old competitive boy, he wanted to challenge me on who could have more, you know, who could talk more about what they were grateful for. So listen, you can play this the way you want to play it. It doesn't even have to be a game. What I found, though, is as Kyle, my son, and I would play it regularly, it became a habit. And so we would go throughout the day and we'd start looking for things that we were grateful for so we could share with each other. So, you know, if you're in the car with your kids or your friends and you want to bring it up, if it's every week on Sunday night dinner, whatever it might be, I found, you know, does this mindful practice of tapping into gratitude, does it change my diagnosis? Does it change my stress level? Like, I don't know. But I'll tell you, it's easy. Sometimes it's fun. And it oftentimes brings about good energy. So I will say, I'm going to quick jump in and say what and who I'm grateful for. And then I'm going to cry because I have so many childhood friends that mean the world to me and I'm still close with. But the one mutual friend that Marnie and I both have is somebody, and I will call her Jenny Horowitz, but Jen Lang. She is been, we called her mom growing up because she took care of us. She had that super cool LeBaron convertible. So we felt very cool when she'd actually pick us up and take us places all around. And through the years, she's somebody that I've stayed very close with, even though we live far away. And I spent many nights sleeping over at her house as a kid. I love and still feel very close to her mother, who I will call Susan, but I just feel, it feels like I got to call her Mrs. Horowitz, right? From all those years of being just a little kid. But I love them from the bottom of my heart. And I am so grateful that they continue to be supportive of me, whether it's, you know, talking about my journey now, they've supported me in some of the foundation events that I've had, or they're just been really good friends. And so today, as you and I are talking, and it reminds me of Jen, I am so grateful time and time again for that whole family, Michelle, Matt, their significant others that I know, both Adam and Rose as well. And of course, you know, Mike, Mr. Horowitz as well. And Scott.
That was so beautiful.
Right? It was, and Scott and Jenny's husband, they're all just wonderful. So I am tossing it to you. It doesn't have to be about people. What I often tell people is sometimes it's the little things that we're grateful for that help us get through the day when life is rotten. You're having a bad day. You might not be like, oh, I'm so grateful for the roof over my head, which you are. It might really be that you're grateful for, as I will always say, days of our lives, because soap opera, their life is worse than mine, right? So tell me something, Marnie. What are you grateful for today and why?
So, well, I was thinking about this yesterday, but I'm grateful for something that hasn't happened yet, but it's going to happen in the next few days. And okay. I'm really excited for it.
Okay.
So I'm grateful that my family of five is going to be getting together next week because my son now lives in Chicago. My middle child is in college and my husband is a doctor and he works a lot of long hours, and getting the five of us together has become more difficult over the years. And so next week, we all five are going to be together for a number of days. And I am so grateful for that. And I'm going to cherish every minute of our time together because it's becoming more limited. So that is what I'm grateful for today. But I'm also very grateful for Jen Lang, Jenny Horowitz, whatever we want to call her. She's been an amazing friend to me too.
Yes. So, well, thank you, Marnie. It's so beautiful. I really enjoyed reading your memoir, getting to know your family a little better. As I said, you know, I've known your parents for years, and to get a glimpse into a different side of them that I didn't know because, you know, they were Mr. and Mrs. Dotchess. And to get to know your kids a little bit, and even Jordan for that matter. That was great. And for those of you out there that are interested in writing a memoir or are just interested in reading a memoir, like this, the stories, as you mentioned, they're universal. And so whether you know the person or not, I think you'd find it interesting. So I will put all the links in the show notes. Again, the book is My Song Unleashed. And for those of you that are listening out there, you know, I'm so thankful. There's so many options out there for podcasts these days. I'm grateful that you're here because my goal in all of this is just to help us all find a little bit of joy during whatever journey we're going through in life. So Marnie, thank you. It's been wonderful.
Thank you so much too for having me. I've loved being on the show with you today.
Well, it's been wonderful. I am wishing you all a great day and sending lots of love and healthy vibes. Bye for now. One more thing. I would be so grateful if you'd take a minute to rate, review, and subscribe. You leaving a review helps us with our podcast ranking. The higher we are ranked, the more people can discover our show. Thank you so much for joining us today. I'm sending you lots of happiness and great health.